Hello and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
Every week we review a new streaming show or movie. This week we are going to review Don't Look Up, a comedy on Netflix that has gotten a fair amount of debates and back and forth about criticism of the film. It is incredibly star-studded. The cast is led by Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence, and it is about a...
This is my first time seeing most of these actors. I wasn't really familiar with them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The way you pronounce it, by the way, is Meryl. Meryl Streep.
She's actually generally considered to be a reasonably talented up-and-coming actress.
Huh. Yeah, new up-and-comer. Fresh face.
Yeah, a lot of famous people who presumably worked on this movie for about a week each. although I will say, we can get into this. So the basic setup for the movie is that there is a comet that is discovered at the beginning of the film that is going to, it's going to strike Earth and wipe out the human race. And so the astronomers, played by Leo and Jennifer Lawrence, are trying to convince the world that that's really bad, and the world is not particularly interested in what they have to say. All of that serving as a pretty on-the-nose, but I would say effective metaphor for the discussion around climate change. What did you guys think?
I mean, it doesn't even feel like it's just climate change, right? It's like science versus politics, right? Like, mm-hmm. I felt a lot of similarities between what we're dealing with in the pandemic and the way that it's received sometimes, right? Like, oh, there is no virus, microchips in the vaccine. Like, how does it get so confusing? Like, it's science, yeah. Right? Like, it's just this truth. And we might not know everything about it, but we have this, like, truth. And it just seems confusing that we can't agree upon an intended action toward that truth. So yeah, it was weird. I mean, I both really liked the movie because it has a lot of things that I enjoy, right? Like stylistically, it was really interesting. It had some funny moments, although I rarely laughed out loud.
Right.
I was like, this is funny, but I didn't laugh, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, funny
thing. Yeah, it's like when someone tells a joke and you're like, ha, that's funny.
Yeah.
But you don't actually laugh and they're like, wait, was it funny though?
They started off right away, right? It's like, oh, okay, this is the type. Like, you immediately get it because they're like, oh, you know, we're on a plane, and they make some jokes about like, we're on this cargo plane. And it's like, kind of like, oh, that's a weird situation to be in. Isn't that funny? And that's kind of like the whole, that's all, that's the tone of the humor, I think, for this.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, I think there are obviously I like many, many of the actors in this film, so it was fun to watch them do their thing, although it wasn't like the best part for any of them, I don't think. Like, maybe Leo did a great job, but
I think that was pretty, I mean, I think it was pretty good for him because it was like the, like, yes, this is who, as a real person, because he's like, I don't know how to get into this, but without being shallow, but like, he's like a famous guy, right? He doesn't really take care of himself at all, but he's...
Well, he's like vegan, but like, you mean like in how he appears.
Like, I mean, yeah, it doesn't look like he's a fan of relatively fitness, unkempt. Let's say. Right, yeah, okay. Yeah. But like, he is handsome because he's just a naturally handsome person. And I feel like IRL, like that's how he would be received, is like, oh, that's a surprisingly handsome...
Dude.
Professor. Like, definitely still a professor... But a pretty handsome one.
Reading one review where somebody was mystified that, so part of the dynamic, I don't think this is a huge spoiler, like the dynamic is that Jennifer Lawrence's character, Kate, is kind of treated by the media as this very shrill, you know.
No, like hysterical. Like
no fun, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. They're just like, boo, you're just like all doom and gloom. Whereas Leo's character, Randall Mindy, like, they're like, oh, like we can, you know, you're the more like...
You're workable. You're palatable.
You sort of are willing. Public. Yeah, you're palatable, exactly. And then there's also a little bit of, oh, and, you know, you're the sexy astronomer, which I know some reviewers were sort of mystified by, because he definitely doesn't look like glammed up Leonardo DiCaprio, but he still looks like Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. I didn't have trouble believing that.
Yeah. No, he's like a dad hot guy kind of thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and also Leonardo DiCaprio, like, we can't let that part go, right? Like,
right.
Even if, here's the thing, like, if we didn't know who Leonardo DiCaprio was and he came into this role and that was supposed to be the shtick, it might not work as well, right? Because you'd be like, yeah, I get it, he's cute, but why are they making such a big deal out of it?
Right.
But,
right,
like, right. We have, whatever, 20 plus years of being like, Leonardo DiCaprio is hot in your head, right? Like, it's just been said so many times that it's, like, inextricable from any character he plays.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, like, handsome in The Revenant, you know? And, like, he's being mauled by bears and stuff. But you're still like, wow, he's so good looking. It just, like, happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree that I didn't laugh that often. And I know there are people whose stance is essentially that comedy is one of those things where it's like the most brutally honest. Your response, your bodily response, is kind of the most honest thing. Is like, if you think it's funny but you're not laughing, then it's not really funny, and you're sort of just, you know, being thinking you should be laughing but you're not really laughing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think fundamentally this is not a very funny movie, and I think there are other things about it that work really well, but I was surprised at how little I laughed. The one exception was Mark Rylance's character, the tech billionaire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just a brutal, brutal send-up of, I would say probably Elon Musk. He's probably closest to my idea of Elon Musk, but I think also, it's not like an imitation of Elon Musk, but like this kind of mostly awkward and unable to express real human emotions person who does also have this weird charisma and ruthlessness.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
He struck me as, like, he was closer in terms of mannerisms and appearance to Larry Page for me, because Larry Page is very much like that. But that one's a bit, like, not of the time. Like, the silver hair and then the, like, very soft spokenness is like a Larry Page thing. Although, like, that was, like, due to medical conditions with his throat, like, mostly later on, right? But definitely Elon, in the way that he's like, he says things like casually as though they are like no big thing, but simultaneously like profound, and also, yeah, like they are stated as fact, right? And people don't really challenge or question it because they're just like, well, this guy's the smartest guy. Like, based on his track record, like, how could you ever deny that he's right or wrong or whatever? Deny that he's right. But, like, I mean, I did write an article about TechCrunch for it because I was so struck by, like,
the... Yeah,
I
had to read that.
It's not a good article.
We did this, but I'm sure it's a fine article, terrible.
But it was basically, like, because it was about that character, but it was more about, like, just how much that character relies on, like, demos to, like, get like to like basically prove everything he does, which I thought was like one of the strongest parts of the movie, is like he's constantly demoing things in the tech style of demoing, and then like the scientists are like, but what about peer review? And then, like, it's a thing because it's just like, it's such a weird contrast, because then you're like, it just struck me as like, oh, of course, but what about, but like, you don't think to ever ask that question when this thing happens out of the world, when there's like, when the stakes aren't necessarily as obvious, right? Like, yeah, if you go to F8 and Zuckerberg is like, oh, look, I strapped VR headsets to all of your faces and now we're doing, no one is like, but did you do any kind of research to indicate like what might be the knock-on effects of this? Like, it never comes up, right?
But it does in the space community. So, like,
It does in things like space, biology, like medicine, like things like that. It comes up in, but like, Facebook has a much more profound effect on everyone, socially and mentally, than does, you know, even the like whatever, like medicine XYZ, right? Like, it's like, that is the thing that we should have been doing peer reviewed studies on in retrospect. Right.
I mean, I think the reason that it's not funny, laugh out loud funny, is because it's laced with so much discomfort, because like it's not hard to draw the, it's not like there's some deep hidden metaphor in there, right? Like right. It is right on the surface looking at you being like, that was your Tuesday, by the way, was like someone denying something factual, or right, like, so it's hard to juggle between those two emotions, I think, of like, this is incredibly uncomfortable because I'm just watching, it could be the news that you're watching, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's as simple as that, or scrolling Twitter, and yet you have Jonah Hill saying some hilarious things.
Yeah.
And so you're like, but I can't pull myself out of that discomfort long enough to get in the zone to laugh at that. But my brain knows it was funny, and maybe it'll laugh later, you know? It's like a, so I like loved this movie, but I also really hated this movie. Like, I felt really divided at the end, you know, of just like, ugh. That was like an onslaught of discomfort based in reality, but also had all these ingredients that I'm supposed to really like, right? Like space and a great cast, and like Adam McKay, I'm a big fan of, and had all these things that would make me like it a lot, and yet I walk away feeling really tired.
Well, right. Weirdly for me, I would say that what I like the movie more as it went along, because it got darker and bleaker, as and especially the ending. I respected it for this sense of, oh, there's no way out and we're totally fucked, and it didn't try to let people off the hook at the end.
Right.
And so even though the...
I was mad at who it did let off the hook at the end, actually.
Yeah, it felt like the early comedy bits didn't work as well for me, whereas when it became less and less funny and more just kind of like, well, everything's bad, and it became almost like a mood piece, that I enjoyed a lot more. Or not enjoy, but I appreciated a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah, I did enjoy it a lot, but then I thought, because I think a lot of the criticism that I was seeing was like, oh, well, this is all obvious, like, what the hell, like, it's just, it's not necessary to do this kind of storytelling again, right? Like, it's all extremely apparent all the time, and it's in fact painful maybe to just go over it like yet another time. But like, I didn't dislike that part about it. I was like, oh, I don't think it's stated enough still. And but then on the other side, I was like, you know, this just like feels like it was like the ethos of Twitter made into a movie. It was just kind of like for me and for other like sort of like liberal left-leaning people, it's just like, hey, we just made your Twitter and how you feel about it into this movie, and then you can feel like that way for like an extended 2-hour period while watching famous people. And I was kind of like, I don't know how I like that. To make makes me feel more like being manipulated, and I know it's probably not intentional, it's more like, at least on the part of like the creators or whatever, like Adam McKay, like it's like, no, he just also feels like that, right? So he's just kind of like putting it's it like out
expressing
there.
Himself, yeah.
Yeah, but the studio is probably more like, oh, well, this will play great with that audience. And like, you know, like they're more familiar with like, we know exactly what lever this is pressing emotionally. And it's like it's not like it's going to do any convincing of anybody else, obviously, right? Like the audience that this is lampooning, they won't touch this with a 10-foot pole. Or if they do, they'll be like, oh, great, like Bill Gates bankrolled this stupid fucking propaganda movie with all these liberal elites, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, to what effect was it? It was one of those things of like, well, you know, it's like a, it's just a nice sort of like sympathy valve thing that we can all kind of like tap and huff on for a little while and then go back to our Twitter feeds when we need top ups or whatever, right?
I think one of the things that has, that I don't necessarily agree with in terms of how that discussion sometimes gets framed, is that it's as if there are essentially only two sides, and this is like essentially reaffirming the liberal side, and no one on the sort of conservative climate skeptic side will listen to it. Whereas I think the amount of viewpoints on it, no. There's more of like
there
a
there used
a
to be more. There's not anymore. It's just two.
No, well, actually, because I would say like the thing to me is that, well, A is, I think that the effectiveness of political art should not be judged solely or even primarily on how it changes minds, because I right. just think that, like, the way that cultural conversation shifts, I think, is I know people will point to certain examples when that has happened, but I think in general, political art doesn't change its minds. That's not necessarily its job. It's about, like, sort of expressing and exploring different issues, even if it's not, like, changing who somebody votes for in the next election. I think in as much as it could potentially have any political efficacy, it may be less about, you know, a red state Trump supporter being like, oh, like, you know, this is really bad. And more, I think, like, a sort of more complacent left-leaning person who might be like, oh, yeah, I care about climate change, but it's, like, number five. Like, you know, number one is, like, the economy and this and like, the fact that we have a, you know, majority, not to say that the United States is the only one that matters, but, like, you know, we have a Congress and a president who are Democrats right now, and yet no significant action on climate change is taking place. Well, that's
because you don't really, because you have two sleeper agents who are just closet Republicans, which I really still right. don't understand, observing as an outsider. Like, why don't they just declare their Republicanism and be done with it? But okay.
Right. And so it's like, I think part of what it's lampooning is not just the fact that there's conservative opposition to any sort of, like, climate change action, but that even people who agree that climate change is a serious issue, part of what their argument is to treat it as, like, one of, like, this bundle of issues that, like, well, we'll get to eventually, but we can't go too far to the left, when it's like, no, like, we're fucked. Like, we're so fucked if we don't do anything in the next few years. Like, and I think that's part of what there is, like, saying, well, if you think you're serious about this, but you're not treating this as the single biggest threat to the continued existence of humanity, what the fuck are you doing?
Right. Well, I think it misses the mark in that, right? Because I agree that political art isn't necessarily meant to change minds, yeah, right? But it can take yeah. us, it can, like, all art is meant to make you step in the shoes of someone else, for the most part, right? Like, you experience mm-hmm. something that you haven't yet and have some empathy for something that is outside of what you understand with your own eyes and ears, right? So, like, that's the step in the right direction. Unfortunately, I think this misses the mark if that's the goal, right? Like, if that is the intended goal, to look up and be like, oh, I'm complacent and I need to care more about this. Because what I ultimately end up caring more about is something that also feels fully unfixable and outside of my control, which is, like, the way discourse is handled in the country.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can't get to step two without step one. So if starting place is that we can't even agree on what we see with our own eyes, right?
Yeah.
Then we're fucked for sure. Like, what do you mean fix climate change? Like, we can't even agree right. the sky is blue. Like,
and the RNC is opting out of the debate. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. That's
yeah. fine. See, Anthony, you're so wrong. There's no subtlety of opinion. We obliterated all of that.
It's all gone.
We successfully destroyed subtlety of opinion and a spectrum of thought with Facebook and Twitter, yeah. another
it should have been peer
platform.
Reviewed.
Yeah, we should have peer reviewed it. That's my point. Brought back again. But it wasn't more like that it didn't create action. It was more that, like, initially I really enjoyed it, right? I had that satisfying hit of, like, yes, exactly. And then afterwards mm-hmm. I felt depressed. And it yeah. was more like personal rather than, like, reflective of its political power
right.
of like, oh man, like, it's not going to do anything. It was just a pleasure hit for me or whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that there can be sort of this, maybe I'm resisting that, just that framing of, like, did it change minds? Did it spur action? Like, I think, and that if it's purely nihilistic, then yeah, it's less like, it's more just like, oh man, like, it's about sort of capturing that feeling of, like, despair, which I yeah. think is an artistically valid
yeah.
response to
yeah,
the
I mean,
state
like,
of the world.
Oh yeah,
well.
For sure.
Movie
and
can't fix things, right? So, like, yeah. let's yeah. like let that go. It's just like 10 years ago, it might have created discourse, and that would have been great, right? Like,
yeah.
10 years ago, discourse is really effective. Now it's like it just created discourse, and discourse fucking blows. And like,
it did, yeah, right? It did create discourse, but it created discourse of, like, it was a very different kind. I think to your other point though, like, where that group where. Because there is a group, and here it's, like, very easy to define, because it's like, okay, we have, like, the Liberal Party and people who kind of align themselves with that ideologically, climate change is like a major priority or whatever. But then if you have the more left-leaning group, in some ways, like the Labour Party, essentially, what's called the NDP, like, they are not big on climate because their thing is workers first, right? So they, like, prioritize workers' rights over, and oftentimes those are in conflict because it's like, well, we want to keep all the automakers working on the factory line rather than, like, automate that or whatever, right? So there, that also audience, blending. I feel like, has, like, the discourse of, like, okay, like I think people reacted to it negatively because maybe they felt that touched. Like, they felt the conflict touched of, like, oh, are you spurred to action in terms of, like, the dramatic action needed to do climate change? Or, like, does that not align with, like, how you prioritize your left-leaning values or whatever? So that was kind of interesting about it.
That also brings up another point that it's a film that's, you know, primarily focused on the American media environment, the American political environment. To what extent did you feel like, oh, like, this is a movie about America versus a movie about problems in the world more generally?
Well, I feel like it's like, I think that it, let's say, like, okay, so the movie is like is a parody, right? Like an exaggeration of the state in the U.S. And I think...
Arguably.
Right. I mean, you could argue it's not even an exaggeration, right? Which is
the sad
thing.
It's not... It's like we're 3 months away from that being, like, just dead on, right?
But then, like, I would argue then that, like, the U.S. is just an exaggerated, like, a cartoonish version of what is happening most other places in the world, right?
And well, one,
like,
could argue that Boris Johnson's kind of a cartoon, so...
Right, yeah, he is a little cartoon. I mean, accepting Britain, I think Britain is perhaps equally cartoonish these days, right? But, like, Canada specifically, or, like, Germany or whatever, like, other parts of the world, like, have this kind of, I think, increasing polarization and, like, destruction of, like, realistic dialogue that crosses multiple aspects of, like, a political spectrum, and it's just like to Jordan's point, it's like another 3 months behind that, right? So
yeah.
So I mean, it still hit. It still struck as, like, this is relevant. It makes sense.
I mean, I think I'm sure that the political dimension of it will just sort of come up again and again as we discuss it. But are there, I guess, in terms of thinking about, just because this is a movie, like we said, that where there's a lot of different people who kind of show up and give their performance, and then it moves on to something else. Were there, like, segments or characters that we particularly liked or didn't like spending time with?
I mean, like, Jonah Hill was probably the closest I came to, like, coming out of that fog and...
Yeah, laughing. He gave me, I think, a couple laugh out loud moments.
Yeah, like, I think that his... He's so funny, just in general, and that character, and the fact that it's his son. His name is Jason, of all names, right? Like, our chief of staff, Jason. Just there was so much nuance in the comedy there that it was the closest I came to coming out of that, like, depression fog throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
I also didn't mind at the end Timothy Chalamet. I thought that was, like, a weird, funny.
I liked him too. I thought he did good. He was kind of like a late ad, and, like, but yeah, he was. I thought he was very enjoyable.
It added something. I was like, this is how late Timothée Chalamet is coming in, and he's, like, stealing liquor from a store. Like, what is happening here with this? But then in the, like, whatever 40 minutes that they gave for his character to develop and become part of the story, it was, again, like, pretty nuanced and interesting, and also delivered just a couple laughs, which I thought was good, even if they were in my heart and not out of my mouth.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I also really liked the Ariana Grande, Kid Cudi through line, but it was less to do with, like, them specifically and more to do with, like, everybody else reacting to them, and in particular, like, Dr. Oglethorpe, like, Rob Morgan's seeming commitment to that storyline throughout. Like, despite otherwise being maybe, like, the most straight man character in the entire thing, he was still, like, totally enamored by, like, the weird celebrity romance, which was great. And then I thought, like, in terms of the other stuff, like, Ron Perlman was, like, I was like, okay, I mean, sure. I like this. That just seemed like a waste. He was the
Hero cowboy spaceman.
Yeah. Maybe they just cut a bunch of that or whatever, but it seemed really kind of like weird set dressing. Yeah. Paul Guilfoyle as General Themes, which is a very funny character name, was also like the one of the few like genuinely funny, I think, story, like laugh out loud storylines throughout the
Jennifer Lawrence's obsession with the free snacks, like,
yeah, and his execution of it was very good too, because he just like had to do it, so he did it like so like, no, this is the way that it worked.
Charge me an arm and a leg.
It was so silly, but I loved that.
And the way it was timed every single time for Jennifer Lawrence, like, it was almost like every time they cut back to her in a scene, she's like, I've been racking my brain, you know, and you think she's about to say something about the comet. She's like, why would he do that? Why?
Yeah, that was good.
It's just too good. And I mean, I think maybe I'm speaking for all of us when I shouldn't, but I know Anthony agrees that the final scene actually was really good. Like, I do feel like it took the right tone. And
you mean like pre-credits?
Like the dinner.
Yeah.
I didn't watch once I saw the names pop up. I don't know if there's more after that.
Oh, there is plenty more.
Yeah. Oh, whoops. I was on a timeline. Everyone was ready for me to be done watching that movie. So no one in the house wanted to watch it with me. And they were all like waiting to be on the TV. So as soon as the credits came on, they were like, okay, done.
You need to get in that new house so you can have a...
I know. I need some kind like of a viewing a lot room. Of things. There's so much that I need. My life is so hard over here. But I thought that the final scene pre-credits with the dinner at the table was good.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me think, should we get into spoilers then?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I was just reading your article, Daryl, and... Oh, sorry, Trash. Go ahead. Give the full spoiler alert, Anthony.
Official spoiler alert.
If you have not watched the entirety of Don't Look Up and you don't want to know how it ends, you should stop listening now. Okay, Jordan, go.
So I was reading your article, and it says that the spaceship at the end that they escaped on was doomed, which was the thing that bothered me most about the ending.
Oh, yeah. No, so did it that bothered crash me too, at the until end? It landed on a planet and then carnivorous aliens ate them.
Oh, that was what he meant by, he was like, you're going to get eaten by
a Bronterock. And then he says, because they're like, what was that? And then he goes, I guess it's a Bronterock or something.
Yeah, it was such a good payoff.
It was very good, yeah.
So there's a thing earlier on where the Mark Rylance tech CEO, he's like, oh, yes, my, like, this brand, you know, like, our amazing, I forget exactly how he describes the product, beads. But, like, our all-seeing AI can now predict your death. And then he's like to Meryl Streep, the president, like, do you want to know? And she's like, of course. And he says, you'll be eaten by a Bronterock. And I'm like, what? And then it's
like, we don't know what it means. That's what he says. No one knows what it means.
Yeah.
And she's like, and she's totally unfazed by it too. She's like, ever since you told him how he's going to die, I'm like excited to know. Maybe I don't want to know. But yeah, no, I do. Tell me. You know, and he's like, you're eaten by a Bronterock. And she's like, oh, okay. Yeah, we don't know what it means at all.
Right. And already that's like a pretty funny moment. And then at the very end, they land. First it said, because they're all in like cryogenic suspension. And it says, so they've escaped. They all had this backup plan for when Mark Rylance's plan to both, you know, capture a lot of the resources from the comet and theoretically to save the planet failed. They all just like went on this ship, flew away, and then it says, I forget, like 45,000 years later, they land on this other planet and they're all standing around naked and and Meryl Streep's character immediately gets eaten by an alien and they're like, what was that? And Mark Rylance says, that was a Bronterock. And he's like, don't pet them. And you can see more of the aliens kind of
closing
crowding in.
Yeah.
Good. Because that was the thing I think that bothered me the most was like, you can't tie this movie up nicely, right? Like there has to be consequences to these decisions that are made over and over and over again throughout the film to like delay fixing this problem. And everyone pays except for them. And then the credits roll. And I'm like, no, like they're the fucking bad guys. Yeah. Like that's like the worst possible ending.
Well, it's brilliant because it's like the, like you know, like there's always the like, well, the billionaires will escape, and you know, Elon's line of like, well, we'll go here and Mars, and people are like this is the good planet. Like the other ones are not, they're not good. You can't go to them. And so this is like the perfect comeuppance of like, look, this is what's going to happen if that's your dream scenario of like, oh, we're elite, like we can just kind of like do this. It's like there's nowhere else to go. Like you're fucked, yeah. Right? But that, so there's another post-credit scene though. So one character,
I didn't stick around for that one, but I only saw it on Wikipedia.
Oh yeah, so one character doesn't get his comeuppance, Jordan, and it's Jason. Jason survives somehow. He emerges from the rubble at the very end.
I'm actually okay with that.
Yeah, it's great. And he does like a Instagram story. It's the end of the world, y'all.
Prayer for stuff. Yeah, it's like one of my favorites. Like lots of people out there have been praying for people, and like, that's great. But like stuff though, like there's gonna be like sick cars and dope apartments, and like I just wanna shoot up a prayer for the stuff.
Amen. Yeah. He was definitely like a highlight, and I think it's probably because he like improvised a lot of his lines, right? Like,
yeah,
one of his was the Kate, when Kate is like there, and he's constantly mean to Kate in like very funny ways, but she's like, who are you or whatever, like aren't you her son? Like that's when we learn that like he's just her son. But then he replies like, I'm the fucking chief of staff, boy with the dragon tattoo.
Although my favorite Jonah Hill line is not from the movie, but how he described his character in an interview, which is, what if Fyre Festival was a person?
That's exactly right. Yes. Yeah. There was like, now thinking back to it, there was a lot more funny things in this movie than I think that I kind of gave it credit for earlier.
Well, they're just like weighted down by like what's on your shoulders by watching it. It's like if it was about something else or some fictional something, or you couldn't so clearly draw the line between that and reality, it would be really, really funny movie. But
yeah. But the hoods was a great like recurring joke of like the Secret Service would put hoods on them when they were.
I made them put the hood on your head. Like they don't do that. The CIA does, but like the FBI don't. I had to convince them, but I did that to you.
That is an extremely cool thing that I did.
Yeah, and she's like, I had a feeling. He was like, well, it's a good feeling because I did it, and I wanted it to happen to you.
When we were talking about how Timothée Chalamet is like a good late ad, like he also has one of the funniest lines, which was when he comes home to like his name?
Twitch
like
thing. Leo's.
Yeah, nice to meet you. I'm Yule. I'm Fire Puma 142 on Twitch. Do you game? To Leo's wife.
And she's like, who told you I game? Who said that I game? Who said she doesn't I even game? Know where to. And Jennifer Lawrence's character is like, I don't think that she's like on Twitch. What are you doing? But yeah, there's like little things that are actually hilarious.
Yeah.
But I thought also, like, if we're talking about highlights, I think this is not like revolutionary to say or anything, but like the cast, even though, so my sister was like, I didn't really like it. It was like a terrible use of this cast or whatever. Mm. But I kind of disagree because I don't think that anyone but, maybe not anyone, but few people besides Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio could have those breaking point moments and you still are like captivated by them. Like how many times do they like kind of lose it and start like screaming, we're all gonna fucking die? Particularly Jennifer Lawrence. Leo really has just like one big one.
Leo's the one, yeah.
But like it's, you know, I think that they showed their stuff yet again of how talented they are. The fact that like you're like, yeah, you know, like you're with them and not like, oh, this again, you know?
Yeah. No, I thought they did a fantastic job, especially because it wasn't the mode of like, because like Leo, I think he just did, or not just did, but a while ago he did a walk around with Elon somewhere talking about like a gigafactory, and it was like, oh, if I just build 100 of these, I can provide enough power to power the whole world or whatever, right? And he was credulous. Like, he plays the credulous climate defender a lot, right, in, like, a nonfiction setting. So, like, for him to be able to turn that off and be someone who is much more relatable and, like, I feel like, believable in this context is actually very impressive, right? Because normally he's like, I don't want to say Sean Penn level, but like almost that level of like, oh, I can't even fucking, like, go, get out of here, go away. Like, go back to your celebrity cave and don't bother us anymore, right?
One of my favorite moments in the movie is not the speech he gives. So basically, his arc, he's probably the one who has the closest thing to kind of a traditional character arc, where he is very, becomes like very like kind of compromised and becomes the palatable scientist. He wants to deliver his message, but like isn't too grim and isn't too doom and gloom and you know, makes it entertaining and you can feel fine after you see him. But like eventually he gets fed up with that and loses his shit on the morning TV show. And then he gives this like really, you know, fire and brimstone speech in it. Then he says, if there's one thing I want you to take away from this, and then it smash cuts to him in the back of a car with a hood on.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was so great.
Yeah. The hood, yeah, that was another fantastic use of the hood. And it was because it was like so established set up at this point that it was like, yeah, it was wonderful.
What did we think the Daily Rip was supposed to be exactly? Because I had an idea in my mind. It actually felt like a blend of two different shows to me, but like leaning more towards another one. But I'm curious if
I thought
guys
it was
had...
like, you know, Rippa and I don't even know who
Strahan or whatever.
Strahan, yeah. Like that kind of thing. I mean, it could also be Good Morning America. I don't think it matters, right? Those are all interchangeable, aren't they? But maybe I don't watch them enough to know.
It felt really Morning Joe to me.
Oh, okay.
To be honest, like it felt very Mika and Joe, especially like the graphics, the opening graphics and stuff like that. And the fact that they talk over each other.
And then Cate Blanchett has this sort of like Mika look, especially her hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I also felt like if there was a blend of another show, it was Kelly and Michael. So
I haven't seen Mika and Joe ever, but I'm aware of its existence.
It's wild. It is a wild morning news program, let me tell you. Like, they all are at this point, but Morning Joe is really something else.
Yeah, I haven't watched a lot of morning TV, but I think what resonated with me as somebody who has watched probably way more late night TV than is good for any person is that sense of let's bring on famous people and never ever talk about something serious. If we do talk about something serious, you have to like acknowledge it in the most formulaic way and then try to move on quickly.
Could it hit my wife's house? Cause
The keep it light is like the thing, right? Where it's like, that is the guiding light in all of those things. Keep it light or like return to a light place by the end of it or whatever.
One of the things about the plot is that, at the beginning, Dr. Mindy and Cate, like, they basically don't get through it all to anyone. They, like, have, like, a media campaign. They see the president, but, like, they're widely dismissed. And then the president decides that, oh, I have to do something on this to distract from this other scandal.
Yeah, it's in my favor. Yeah.
Right. In the midterms. And so that's when we have the first launch where I agree that Ron Perlman's character is weirdly underused, but he, like, leads this... all these other ships that are supposed to help destroy the comet. And then they're sort of halfway, out of atmosphere when the tech CEO kind of pokes his head and he's like, hey, I need to talk to you, to the president. And then convinces her to call the mission off and all the spaceships essentially do a U-turn.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Maybe not the most... That was one of the less realistic parts of the movie, I would say.
I actually thought that one of the most unrealistic parts of the movie was the sit, tight, and assess. I know it's, like, used to serve a greater purpose that, like, no one wants to really take this seriously. But politically speaking, like, anyone with any acumen would know that, like, a world-ending event actually could be, like, the biggest pollster.
Right.
That you could possibly be offered, right? Like, you will win the midterms, you'll win everything, like, distracts from anything else. It's a golden ticket.
I think the thing, though, is, like, they know that, they are savvy enough to know that, but they're, like, base enough to, like, to save it for when they actually need it.
Need it, right.
Which is, like,
that might make more sense.
Yeah, because, like, I think there is an element of... especially among them, but like, and partly bred of their like distrust or, you know, their thing of like, because they're constantly like, well, we have Ivy League scientists.
Yeah, like, right? Let's get, well, University of Michigan State.
What are you talking about? Was pretty good. I wonder how Michigan State feels about the constant. They try to defend it by being like, no, like, they have a really good astronomy program.
Jennifer Lawrence is like, do you want to see my SAT scores? Are you fucking kidding me?
But like, there's a part of it where like, I just don't think they believe it. Like, I think they mostly don't believe it. And it's because it's like, there's just a culture of like, don't believe a thing, right? Which is like, we kind of told people, you know, since we were kids or whatever, like, just don't believe what you see. And the intent was good. It was like, apply critical thinking and like track down like the real truth. Reliable sources. But like, what it ended up being was like, don't believe anything. People are always trying to trick you. And then instead, yeah, like, go with your gut is like what the interpretation that people like seem to have taken away from it. Right.
There are people in my life who say, I have common sense, as a retort to something that absolutely doesn't make any common sense. Right. Like, it's like, well, look, the mail-in voting thing, right? Like, is an easy one where it's like, well, if, you know, only 1% of people vote by mail, like, sure, they can catch it. But if 25% or 50% of the population votes by mail, it's just common sense that there would be fraud. And it's like, there's evidence that there wasn't.
Right.
Like, actual evidence. So common sense would tell you to look at the evidence and then make a decision. She's like, yeah, oh, well, it's in my gut. Like, it's just obvious. I'm smart. And that's how I feel.
Right.
What?
Right. And so the way that plays out, which I think this was actually funny and pretty good, was in the later stages of the movie. So the initial mission gets called off because
they find out that
CEO...
gonna be very lucrative to mine the asteroid.
You can't just blow it up or knock it off course. I guess their goal initially was to knock it off course, and it said like, let's break it into smaller pieces, which will make it safe to harvest all the different minerals that we want in order to make more cell phones. And
well, he
which is a real problem,
to make more cell phones, he says, to end poverty and world hunger, right? Like, he turns it into this like, save the world.
Yeah, which is another great thing that he does in particular, is like change the venal, greedy, actual end of a thing into something like noble and like for all humanity, right? Which is also very, very tech company, right? It's like,
oh, we're changing the world. It's all over the place. We're changing the world, right?
Right. Well, there's two elements to it. One is the sort of like veneration of jobs, and so it's like, if you do anything that hurts my company, then you hate jobs.
Right.
And then secondly, the sort of like, I am a visionary tech CEO and we're changing the world, and it sort of combines the two. And part of that is that then like, they're waiting way until way later, and then also like, a lot of people are still like downplaying,
they wait until day of.
Yeah, super dumb. And then to the point where the comet is visible,
it's like
in
a
the
month
sky
out or so, like, yeah, there's no going back, no knocking it off course at this point,
right? And what's amazing is then the Kate and Dr. Mindy, they start to a social media campaign around the idea of just look up, like, and then the backlash to that is the don't look up movement. And it's like, don't tell me to look up, and it like seems really stupid, but actually completely believable, and I totally think that's what would actually happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, until they're at a rally and one redneck looks up and is like, oh, what is that?
That I think, like for political operatives or whatever, like spin folks, like it must be so, just like such a, especially people who have been at it for many, many, many years, right? Like, it must be so wonderful to just now be like, all we have to do is say the opposite. Like, if there's a campaign we want to counter, we just say the opposite thing. And then our folks will pick it up and rally behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're like, if the other people are saying that, then I have to say the opposite, right? Yeah. It's like totally based on like binary and opposition. But
yeah.
Oh, goodness.
And so then at the end, you know, they aren't able to save the world. And so there is this very lovely and sweet scene where... the Dr. Mindy, who's been cheating on his wife with the Kate Blanchett character. He and Kate and her new boyfriend, Timothy Chalamet, they all Fiance. Go to... and
she always says, why not to? He's like, make out, why not?
Yeah, which... yeah. That's the correct answer when the world is about to end.
That was one of my favorite Timothy Chalamet lines, though. It was like, can you not say why not? Like, it just kind of sucks. Like,
yeah.
Like, you don't want to do it.
It makes you feel like trash when you do that.
And they have this, like, lovely dinner together with Leonardo DiCaprio's sons as well, who look like they're 40. I was a little confused by that.
Oh, I didn't think they looked old. I thought they were cast well, too. Like, they did the beards and everything. They were like, trying to be little mini Leos.
Maybe not the age, but they looked like, I guess, sort of classic large adult sons. Which, I mean, partly because Leo, you know, generally has... I mean, partly because he only acts every few years. But he hasn't been in movies where he has grown children. And so it was, like, it was a little odd. Weird to me. But I got over it and found it very moving. And so they're all sitting together as the world ends, and I thought that was the right note to end the movie on. I thought also they had an answer, a little bit of an answer to the sort of like despair question in the dinner, where they say like, well, we tried, right? And then that is worth something in and of itself.
Yeah, and from that moment on, they're talking about like fake apple pie versus real apple pie, and how did you go about making this coffee? And it's like, up until the very last second, we're just going to enjoy being together and like the simplicity of things, right? Like, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah. And also, I mean, and Yule has like the grace part, right? Like,
yeah, where he says the prayer.
Which is very, it's delivered, you know, sincere, right? Like, it's just like, there's a sincere religious expression. Which is another thing that I felt kind of like, I mean, I'm not a religious person, but I was kind of like, this is fine. Like, this is good. Like, that's a good expression of...
if you're going to throw one up, right?
Yeah.
Imminent doom of a species is probably a good time, right?
Yeah. And I don't know if there's a weird like trend thing of like we're coming back around to like maybe actually religion is good in like a left leaning thought, because I'm seeing more of that in places and I'm seeing it pop up a bit more often.
Well, if religion was replaced by tech, right? Which I'm not saying it's a one for one, but like the structure, right? Remember when we were talking to on the Found podcast to that. Who was it, the real founder, who was like, the things we sought from religion have in many ways been replaced by tech, right? Like the idea of community and all of these things.
Yeah, that was actually just like a subtle plug for the Found podcast.
Yeah, just slipping it in. But like that, like tech definitely broke it. And that's not saying that like religion was without its faults, right? Because there are many, many, many of them, like tons of bloodshed, blah, blah, blah. But like... there's an argument probably like now that we're talking about it to be made for like the rules of religion kind of having kept people a little bit more in line and accountable to one another. Right. And like accountable to a single source of truth, and there were some benefits there that might've been lost along the way.
Yeah. Well, if I think way back to undergrad poetry philosophy, Daryl, like I remember being there's a, humans have an innate need for like a receptacle for faith, and they'll find one regardless of what it is. And like religion maybe was a fairly useful one, especially in its time. And tech is maybe a very dangerous one, right? If I'm updating that theory, but like,
Right. We're getting real into it.
Real into it.
Well, yeah. I mean, are there other thoughts that we have about either Don't Look Up or just life in the universe in general?
Well, I was just, when we were talking about the Don't Look Up campaign, and when I was watching it, I could not stop thinking about that one meme that is like the girlfriend and the boyfriend, and the girlfriend's like, I saw you with her. He's like, you gonna believe me or are you gonna believe your eyes? Like, too good. It's like toxic boyfriend.
For me, it was like that there was too easy. Everybody got off too easy because it was like a nice, quick death, and it was like a quick course to it, whereas like if I, because we brought up the pandemic, because I know it's like climate change, but I think a pandemic is like probably a more accurate, realistic, it's like not to get too depressing, but like, you know, maybe we'll just be in cascading viral pandemics until the world kind of slowly peters out. And like, it's not going to be pleasant. It's going to be long and drawn out and not clean and quick and ending.
Tribal and violent. And all of these things that are
upsetting. And that was what I did. Like, that was my worst takeaway. It was like, if only we could have something so nice. And
I wonder how realistic the end was, right? Because like, again, I'm like countering that. I've been reading Project Hail Mary. So I'm in like Andy Weir's universe of like exact science, or as exact as you can be, right? And like realistic math. And I'm wondering if that's actually how it would be if a 9-kilometer comet hit at whatever speed in the Pacific, if it would actually just instantly shut down a home, or if it would.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea. I don't know that.
Be more gradual.
I would imagine, yeah, it probably would depend a lot on location, but I don't know a lot about, yeah, the physics. I do think that probably there would be pockets of survivors, but it would super suck. I mean, in that sense, the fact that the Jonah Hill character survives is, I mean, I don't think this is how it's meant to come across, but actually that's the worst punishment, because he's there to like slowly starve to death or die of an infection or something,
all alone, no less,
way worse.
Yeah, but he does get to say, "What up, y'all? I'm the last man on earth. Shit's all fucked up. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We out here." That was the full line.
There's no y'all. Oh my god.
But I do, I mean, that is one of the differences, is I do think like the various sort of catastrophes that we're facing is that it won't be this sort of snap and then things are over. It'll be, oh, things will just get worse and worse and worse, and potentially people will, there's also not necessarily a moment where everyone's like, oh shit, we fucked up, we were all wrong, time to panic and die, like, right. That there will, you know, you like, no. There will be people who are in it to the, in their sort of whatever, their denialist tendencies to the bitter end. And they'll be like, no, like California has always been on fire. That's right, just right, how right. It is. Like, that's normal.
It's meant to float out into the ocean right around this time.
Yeah. New York. I don't remember New York. It's always been a aquatic underground, underwater park.
Yeah. So happy weekend, I guess, to everyone out there. Yeah.
You know what? I think what is interesting and what I would love to do is once all of the, like, we could just like make, well, we have notes, we have the whole podcast, but like when the final episode is out for Station 11, we need to do some compare and contrast when we check
it
out.
It should
that.
Be today.
Is this the last one?
Yeah, it's the, like, okay. We could go watch it right now, but did you guys read Station 11?
Yes.
I've read it. I have not seen the show yet.
I've read it too. Fantastic. The show is so different from the book.
Yeah. But very, very good.
It is good, but also whatever, we'll save that for our episode because I have a lot of thoughts. But
my final thought on Don't Look Up and on general sort of discourse on political movies is I would say that in general, try not to approach anything like this as, oh, is this going to convince the other side because I am a perfectly enlightened person who doesn't need to learn anything. And if you try to approach it more as, hey, what does this have to tell me about my own
actions? No, I don't like that. Actions? That's uncomfortable. And also...
yeah, stop it. I mean, you sound a little bit like someone who doesn't need to learn anything.
Anthony?
Trying to tell us how to be.
I'm just going to
Fair enough. Maybe I'm falling into the same trap. But I will say that that, to me, is what was valuable about it, was that I felt that I wasn't doing enough. That, like, yeah, why is it that I care about celebrities as much as I care about climate change? I feel bad about myself.
Right. Yeah, no, I think we should just shout you down with shouts of beef until you can no longer
talk. We're the fucking worst. Like, we literally are the bad guys in the movie right now. But, Tony, I actually think that what you said is very good.
Yeah.
Worry about yourself is essentially what he said.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was a good use of celebrities to that end. Like, it's like, you know.
Yeah. This is you way should, better than them singing Imagine.
Right, because at the end you should be examining, like, wait, why did I need this to make this point or whatever? Like, why was I so intrigued by this delivered in this mechanism? Yeah.
And kudos to Adam McKay.
Always kudos to Adam McKay. I think he does great work there at McKay Industries.
Inc.
All right, well, let's wrap it up there. So if you have thoughts on Don't Look Up or our review, you can shoot us an email, info@originalcontentpodcast.com. That's info@originalcontentpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @originalcontent. And we always appreciate it when you subscribe and leave us a positive review in Apple Podcasts or the podcast app of your choice. Daryl and Jordan, have a great weekend. Everyone else, thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.